spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Texas Pioneer, was written by Mart Siegel. It is one of a series of programs dramatizing outstanding moments in American Jewish history.
Anybody to home? This way, friends. Hitch your horse to the post and come into the house.
That sand gets flying can flay a man alive.
One gets used to it, my friend.
I can get used to most anything, I reckon. Even Texas. even getting lost in Texas. What town is this?
It's called Castroville.
Castroville? Never heard tell of it.
It is not so big a place. I am Henry Castro.
Castro of Castroville? Your family settle this place?
My family, no. Not exactly.
Well, there must be some connection.
Oh, yes. You could say I believe that there was some connection. Yes, there is a connection.
An old man in a small house on a wide and windswept plain in Texas. The year 1860 and a connection. A connection more than between the one man, Henry Castro, and the one place, Castroville. A connection between all the hopes hoped and all the dreams dreamed by countless men in distant lands. And a new frontier called America.
Men saw it from a distance, felt the pull and the compulsion, and it called to something deep in them. Something about the name and place and mood moved outward silently across the oceans. Something about the untouched giant forests and the vast horizons. Something real, yet unreal. Something hoped for and to be made. America, they called it. And the great land beckoned.
In a thousand places, the feather beds were packed and the tears of farewell forever shed. In a million hearts, the dream was nurtured and the passage purchased. And by an infinite number of personal decisions to strike out westward towards the great horizon. Swedes and Danes and Scotsmen, Germans, Frenchmen, Spaniards took the first steps in the subtle process that would make of all Americans. Many people, yet one nation.
They would go across the seas toward the magic place, the place America. And its meaning was not only land and space and hope and opportunity. Its meaning was a dream that men might achieve, open and free and for the having. A dream of freedom and self-mastery.
Listen, for this is part of the saga. Part of the giant stream of energy and hope which built America. Listen, for this is how it was. The story of Henry Castro, Texas pioneer.
I was born Henri de Castro, son of France, a son of the people of Israel, in the year 1786. As a young man, I was a devoted follower of Napoleon. In February of 1806, at the age of 20, I went to Paris at the emperor's bidding. It was a month before I returned to my native Saint-Esprit in southwestern France on the mission which had taken me to Paris.
Welcome home, Monsieur de Castro.
It is good to be home, Charles. Water him well and let him rest, Charles. I've ridden him hard.
Oui, monsieur.
My father, he is well?
As well as usual, monsieur.
In bed, Charles, or able to walk?
Able to sit before the fire. You will find him in the main hall, monsieur.
Not impatient, Father.
We had a right to expect more to come of the assembly.
Ah, you are young, Henri. You forget our history.
I do not forget it, my father.
For how many hundreds of years did we have to hide our religion, to practice it in secrecy?
It is a different age, my father. I thought that now...
You thought when the emperor summoned you to Paris to the assembly of Jewish notables, all would be resolved. But from what you tell me, much has been resolved. It is an age of a new tolerance.
Tolerance? Yes, that is a word which describes my disappointment.
You are disappointed with tolerance, Henri?
I speak with respect, my father, but you do not understand.
I understand. With all my years, I understand. You ask too much. In no land has there been more beneficence toward our people than in France.
And in America?
I do not believe it.
Wait. I will show you, my father. Here. I have the words here.
Oh, of what?
Of a letter written by George Washington. Written to a Hebrew congregation. It is now no more that toleration is spoken of, as if it was by the indulgence of one class of people that another enjoyed the exercise of their inherent natural rights. That is what I mean, my father.
An ideal, not a reality.
Nonetheless, the words of a head of state.
And you think it is different there in America? Different from France?
I do not know for sure if it is different. What I feel... It will be different, Father. It will be different.
It was new in the world. Unique. A dream based in a principle still to be fought for, still to be won. That all men are created equal.
A dream enclosed by a geographic actuality. America. A dream which might find its way to a man's spirit through many avenues. A dream which, having found its way, might grow with a man to shape a man's growth, to shape his destiny.
I was 27 when I married Amelia. It was 1813, a year in which the empire of Napoleon was disintegrating on the battlefields of Central Europe. My wife's family was established mainly in Italy, and it was to Italy we went. For 13 years we lived there, yet I think I knew, even then, that Naples was but a way station on the path to America. In 1827, I was appointed consul of the Kingdom of Naples to Providence, Rhode Island.
Henri, is that you?
It is I, Amelia, but it is not Henri.
Not a riddle, Henri.
No riddle at all. And you, my dear, you are you.
That I know.
But you are not Madame de Castro.
Come, Henri, enough.
You have become, my dear, Mrs. Castro. Mrs. Henry Castro.
It is a joke, Henri.
Henry. I have changed our names, my dear.
You have changed our name.
And our citizenship. Today, we are citizens of the United States.
But, Henri, we have only just arrived. We are not even settled in this house. What are you doing?
Champagne, Amelia. It is an occasion.
An occasion, yes, but impossible.
Not at all impossible. Amelia, you're not drinking your champagne.
Henri.
Henry.
Whatever your name, Henri, how can you be a citizen of America? You are a consul of Naples.
I resign tomorrow.
You would give up your livelihood?
We are not without resources, Amelia.
And your allegiance to France, your allegiance to Naples. Oh, Henri, our friends, our families.
Amelia, think. Think back. In my heart, I've been a citizen of this country for more than 20 years.
This was how it was. The dream, somehow planted, somehow waiting, swelling and bursting forth in the green moment of decision. For men in many climates, speaking many tongues, a monumental decision, and a will compounded of hope and desperation, and sometimes fear, chosen out of all the choices that a man might make, to leave behind friends and family and ancient homesteads, the familiar landscapes, and the familiar enemies for something sensed, yet quite unknown. This was how it was.
He was Henry Castro now, American. For 15 years, in Providence, then in New York, he was banker, financier, businessman.
I traveled often to France. They would call me Monsieur de Castro, and I would correct them.
He negotiated loans for large-scale projects in Louisiana. He worked to float loans for the Republic of Texas.
I had begun with wealth, my inheritance. And in a land of great enterprise, a time of great enterprise, I prospered. Yet,
by 1842, Henry Castro, aged 55, had acquired wealth, position, prominence. In terms of history, his life was just about to begin.
No, Amelia, I will not need the greatcoat.
It is February, Henry. It is cold in February in Paris.
I am not going to Paris, Amelia.
You said you would leave next week.
Not for Paris, Amelia, not this time.
You are going elsewhere?
To Texas.
To Texas? Why to Texas?
To speak with President Houston.
You are negotiating another loan for Texas?
No. No, that is not what I have in mind.
All right. You need not tell me. But some things I know better than you. I will pack the greatcoat. It is probably very cold in Texas.
Mr. Castro, the Republic of Texas is grateful to you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Very grateful. We've not forgotten your efforts to negotiate our loan in France.
It is that experience which brings me here, Mr. President.
You wish to help us float another loan?
To the contrary, sir. This time I have come to ask your help.
If it is within my power, Mr. Castro.
Mr. President, in my native France, nearby Germany, there are tens of thousands of farmers and peasants without land.
Yes, I've heard of these people.
Their hands ache for the feeling of soil which is their own. If you were to offer them land, free land.
It is not so simple a matter, Mr. Castro.
You have the land to give.
Yes, of land there is a plenty. But much of Texas is wilderness, much is desert.
There have been deserts crossed before, Mr. President, and wilderness made to blossom as the rose.
Not by adventurers, Mr. Castro. It is adventurers who come to Texas.
The people of whom I speak, they are not adventurers. Give them land, they will sink the roots of their vitality into it.
I believe they would. But as you well know, we're a struggling young republic. It takes capital to bring new settlers across an ocean.
I will advance it, sir.
You will advance the capital? Do you understand what is involved?
I think so, President Houston. I have prospered in this country.
And who is to convince these people to settle here?
I will undertake that, too.
Mr. Castro, I admire your enthusiasm. Are you aware of the fact that the government of France is offering free land to these same people elsewhere?
In Algeria? Of course. Algeria is not Texas. Algeria is an old world.
It is the new world that
fires men's imaginations.
And these new settlers, if they do come here, who will give them the farm implements they'll require? Who will see to it that they're housed, that they have food in the first hard year?
I am prepared to assume those responsibilities also.
But why, Mr. Castro? It's a poor investment, I warn you. You know we can give you nothing in return but wasteland.
You'll give me much more, President Houston. You give me the opportunity to repay this continent. You give me the priceless opportunity to build the House of Liberty. In February of 1842, the legislature of Texas set aside two gigantic tracts of wilderness land west of San Antonio for settlement by those I would bring to America. The arrangement seemed simple. The new settlers would receive free land from Texas, free passage, and whatever was needed in the first year from me. I was to be compensated in land, undeveloped land, by Texas. In honesty, I did not think it a very promising speculation. She opposed the plan for reasons I might have expected.
It is too much, Henry, far too much for you to undertake.
Amelia, it is the most worthwhile project I can imagine. And the most exciting.
At 55, to travel on so difficult a mission.
You know I love to travel, Amelia.
To go from farmhouse to farmhouse in Alsace. You will love that, too?
If it opens a door to the future for the man I talk to, yes, I will love that, too.
And if the future for that man should be starvation, Henry?
It won't be. It will be abundance.
You are sure, Henry?
Abundance and freedom. You will see. It is an open land, Amelia, like all America. Open and with the beauty of God's handiwork.
Henry?
Yes, Amelia?
You must forgive me.
For what, my dear?
For saying you were 55. When you speak of America, you're not 55. I will pack your greatcoat, Henry. It is cold this time of year in France.
In Alsace and in Lorraine, in the district of the High Rhine and the Low, men paused and listened and heard in the word America spoken by a pioneer in broadcloth and a high silk hat, an echo of their inner hopes. By lamplight in the weather-beaten farmhouses, they pored over maps put into their work-worn hands, traced the lines of homesteads on distant soil, remembered the voice of the visitor from America. It is as in the Bible, my friend. They shall possess it forever. From generation to generation shall they dwell therein. And each in his own moment lifted his eyes slowly at the farmhouse table, the dream now turning towards reality, to look into the eyes of wife or child or parent and announce simply a new destiny of freedom in a new world. We will go, they said. We will go.
November 13, 1842. The port of Le Havre, France.
I stood upon the wharf waiting for Etienne and my assistant. It was a starry night, a night for a beginning. Etienne?
Oui, Monsieur Castro.
You have checked all the passengers? They are in comfortable quarters?
All is arranged, Monsieur Castro.
Food, medicine, supplies?
All as planned, Monsieur. We weigh anchor within the hour.
I wish you Godspeed, Etienne. May all go well. Au revoir.
Monsieur Castro.
Yes, Etienne?
You will not wait to see the Ebro sail?
No. No, I will not. When the Ebro sails, Etienne, I will be in the synagogue. When the Ebro sails, I wish to be in prayer.
By ship, carrying men and women and children through the starry nights to a new continent, a new life, a new freedom. The Louis-Philippe out of Dunkirk, the Lyon from Le Havre, the Jeannette Marie from Antwerp.
In the first 18 months, more than 700 colonists, in an exodus from an old world, an exodus initiated, directed, inspired by an American named Henri Castro.
In 1843... I took Amelia and our children to the first settlement established by the pioneers I had helped come to America. They had voted to call the place Castroville, and for this I was proud and grateful. But Castroville was not without its problems.
Ah, good morning, Etienne.
Good morning, Amelia. It has a pleasant sound, the bell on your door.
Yes, we are quite civilized. Quite. Henry, it is Etienne.
Beautiful morning, Etienne.
I had not noticed the weather.
Ah, I see. We have run out of food again?
No, not food this time, Henry.
Farm implements, then? I authorize you to buy them and have them carted from San Antonio.
Not farm implements, either. This time, water at the western end of the settlement.
Water?
Mm-hmm.
Then we must dig new wells.
We have dug new wells again and again. They run dry.
You have tried in many places?
Everywhere, within the territory of the grant.
I see. Amelia.
Yes, Henry.
I am going to Austin for a few days. I must see President Houston.
Henry.
is a considerable piece of land, Mr. Castro. There's no way it can be granted to you.
Then I will purchase it, Mr. President.
A tract 4 miles wide and the length of your present territory? That will require a considerable sum.
The settlers need the water. The additional land will give them access to the Medina River.
Castro, you're an extraordinary man. You cannot possibly go on this way.
I intend to, Mr. President.
You act as if your resources were without limit.
I assure you they are not.
But you persist. I've had the reports. You're plowing everything you own into your colony. Why, Castro? Why are you doing it?
Perhaps because I cannot do otherwise. Perhaps, Mr. President, because I believe, even if I fail in all I hope for, the harvest of what I do will be a harvest of liberty.
He purchased the land, and to it, in the next 3 years, he led more than 4,000 new colonists. 22 times, the ships left the old world, bringing settlers across the great ocean to Castroville. 22 times, the wagons made their way up the perilous Texas trails. And with each new contingent of settlers, Henry Castro's once great fortune was reduced. By 1847, he had exhausted his personal resources and gone hopelessly into debt.
There is only my jewelry, Henry, if it will help.
I thank you, Amelia. It will pay some of our debt.
I give it to you freely, Henry. But...
Say it, Amelia.
I have never understood it. I have never really understood Castroville.
Or Castro, Amelia.
Oh, I have tried, Henry, but I do not understand. You were rich. Now you are poor. You were young, and now you are old. You were strong, and now you are weak.
Amelia, what is a man for? What shall he seek?
I do not think I know anymore.
I have taken more than I have given, Amelia. What a man gives for a dream is not taken from him.
A dream? This barren town.
The dream is liberty.
Liberty in Texas, Henry? Liberty where there is slavery?
Freedom is not won all at once, Amelia. Nor is it ever won completely. But a man must live, each man, so that his life is a step forward on the road to freedom. Not only for himself, but for all men. We cannot all succeed in all we do, but we can strive. Each one. And in the striving, in the dreaming, we free ourselves. We move the whole world towards a new freedom and a more perfect time to come.
It was new in the world, unique, America. And its meaning was not only land and space and hope and opportunity. Its meaning was a dream that men might strive for. A dream based in a principle still to be fought for, still to be won. Still to be fought for in this time as in that. Still to be won. That all men are created equal. This is how it was. For Swedes and Danes and Scotsmen, Germans, Irish, Spaniards, for all who struck out westward towards the great horizon. Among them, Henry Castro, son of the people of Israel, son of France, Texas pioneer.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Murray I. Gerfine, President of United Highest Service, the Worldwide Jewish Immigration Agency. Mr. Gerfine.
America is today as it was to Texas pioneer Henry Castro and his colony of immigrants, a dream of freedom and self-mastery. Today our immigrants are the refugees, the dispossessed, the uprooted victims of war and upheaval. The immigrants of today will prove as sturdy as the immigrants of yesterday. Today there are no longer people like Henry Castro, who single-handed performed this visionary mission of mercy. Now there are groups of people of goodwill banded together in specialized immigration agencies and community welfare organizations of all faiths who have taken over the work of Henry Castro. The process of immigration and resettlement is like a process of rebirth. To the families we help, it means a new life. It is literally as if they had been born again. In this rebirth, our country is enriched in every aspect of our culture. Our sciences, professions, arts, trades, and industries are enriched. The American people welcome the newcomers with warmth and understanding, for all Americans were once immigrants to these shores. Less than 2 weeks ago, the first group of European refugees entered the United States under the new refugee law signed by President Eisenhower on July 14, 1960. Only 3 days ago, the second group of refugees to arrive under this law were transported by jet plane. Whether he came by sailing ship or now comes by jet plane, the immigrant has always come with high hopes for himself and his children. America receives them in the same spirit, for they too will become worthy participants in the American dream. And from their midst will rise a citizenry of whom we shall be proud. Let us not falter in our work as successors to the Texas pioneer, Henry Castro. For them and for us as well, Thanksgiving Day 1960 was an unforgettable occasion, reaffirming our obligation to all those who await their chance for a new life in the free world.
Thank you, Mr. Gerfine. Our eternal light drama today, Texas Pioneer, was written by Mark Siegel. Cantor David Butterman sang the liturgical introduction. Santos Ortega was featured as Henry Castro, Amy Siddell as Mrs. Castro, and Jim Bowles as Sam Houston. Others in the cast were Martin Newman, Harvey Hayes, and Guy Remp. Our narrators were Roger DeCoven and Walter Arnold. Our program was directed by George Voutsas. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.